Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Haley, and this is
Bold on the Big Screen. So, welcome to our very first episode of Bold on the Big Screen. We are so excited to share this new project with you. Haley and I are avid film buffs, and we have dreamt of being able to share our opinions, love for film, and knowledge with a wider audience. And I guess I'll just let Haley introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her background.
Yeah, so I'm Haley. I'm a senior here at CU. I'm a media production major, sort of with a focus in documentary filmmaking. I've been an avid film buff since I was a little kid, and then that sort of blossomed when I took some film classes in high school and I started making my own short films, and I've always loved film as an art form. And this, you know, chance to sort of talk about movies on like an actual platform with Serena is something I'm super excited to do. It's like my passion project, and I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then about me, I guess I'll remind you, my name is Serena. I'm also a student here at CU. I'm a senior, and I'm studying strategic communication with an emphasis in media design. I've got minors in philosophy and creative tech and design. So basically what I'm saying is I don't have the more academic background of film like Haley does, but I do have a passion. Film has always been a part of my life. It's a tradition in my family to go out to the movies or sit in the family room for a movie marathon. So I think this is my passion project as well, because part of me wishes I would have had the chance to study film here at CU. So I suppose this podcast will be my chance. Anyway, enough about us. Let's get to the discussion. Today we're talking about Don't Worry, Darling, which is directed by Olivia Wilde, written by Katie Silberman, and it stars Florence Pugh and Harry Styles, most famously. And there has been a lot of talk about this film, and it literally came out late September, so it's only been out for a little while. But it's been talked about even before it came out, months before, so I think this will be a very juicy discussion.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and summarize the film so that all of us are on the same page. We remember more about the details of what sort of happens in the plot and the overall story. I do want to just say that we are going to spoil the end of this film. It does have a twist ending, and it is just kind of hard to talk about this film without talking about the ending. We're going to go really in-depth into the details, our opinions about this twist ending. So if you haven't seen the film and you want to see it before you hear what we have to say, you have been warned that we will be talking about spoilers. So go see the film and then come back and listen to us after you've seen it and see how your opinions compare to ours. So for the summary, Alice, who's played by Florence Pugh, and her husband Jack, who's played by Harry Styles, live in a picture-perfect 1950s-era utopia, which is placed smack dab in the middle of the desert. They live in these sort of beautiful tailored neighborhoods with these very pretty 1950s stereotypical houses that are sort of laid out in this spiral formation in the town that they live in. They have bright colored lawns, really nice swimming pools, and sort of all of the stereotypical things you would imagine in the perfect 1950s neighborhood. There's about 70 people who are all couples that live in this town total, all who work for this company called Victory Project, which also happens to be the name of the town that they live in. Every day, in stereotypical 1950s fashion, the men leave for work in sort of a ritualistic type way, where they all get in their cars and drive off like in a line together at the exact same time. And then, of course, the women stay home to cook, clean, shop, and gossip about their lives. And then the rest of the time in Victory Project is spent having these lavish parties and basking in the success that is the town that they have built. And then gradually, Alice, played by Florence Pugh, starts to notice a few bizarre occurrences that reveal to her that her little utopia might not actually be what it initially seems. She starts looking for answers and in hopes of unraveling the secrets that Frank, who is the head of Victory Project, seems to be hiding from the town's residents. And then, of course, we eventually learn that Victory Project is actually some sort of virtual simulation that the men are willingly taking part in and the women do not know about. So basically, these men who have failed to succeed in the real world try to create this perfect society for themselves where they are these successful and powerful businessmen and their women or wives are happy little unassuming housewives. And then eventually, as we'll go really deep into, the whole thing just blows up in their face.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot going on in this movie, and we're going to kind of break it down and with what we think about it and what other people have said about it. So I guess we'll just go into our initial reactions. I can start with mine. I think that we knew a lot about the film before going into it. Of course, it's everywhere online. It's on social media. Tons of news publications are talking about it. So I think that I had a bit of a negative opinion before I even saw it going into the movies, but I knew that I still wanted to see it. So I went in thinking it wasn't going to be very good. And initially, when it ended, Haley and I looked at each other and we were just kind of confused. And we were like, why did it get such bad reviews? Because we enjoyed it initially. I think that it was a beautiful movie. Visually, I think Florence Pugh obviously did a very good job. Harry Styles got a lot of flack for his performance, but I thought it was pretty good. So yeah, right after I had seen it, I was like, this was not that bad of a movie.
Yeah, we sort of had this like moment, like Serena said, where we looked at each other and we were like, I think we both said at this exact same time, we were like, that was pretty good. Like, what's the deal? Like, that 35% or whatever on Rotten Tomatoes is terribly wrong. So yeah, I think that that's kind of an important part of this, that initially, at least for us, that initially we didn't really understand any of the flack that it was getting. And then sort of later on, the more we thought about it, the more we've begun to realize that there are a lot of there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that actually sort of start to unravel the more you think about the actual plot of the story. So it's, yeah, it's because it's just, it's not terrible. It's not one of those movies that immediately as you're walking out of the theater, you're like, ugh, I can't believe I just paid money and sat through that for 2 hours. It's just later on when you start to like think about what you've seen, you're kind of like, wait, that doesn't make sense. And that doesn't make sense. And like, what the hell was with that thing? And like all of that stuff. But initially, not a bad film.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And there was a lot of good going into it, going into like thinking about the film itself. I already talked about Florence Pugh, but I don't think that she has ever done a bad job in any movie she's ever been in. And she killed it in this movie. She had an incredibly raw performance, and you really felt her confusion and her pain. And I don't know. I think that she really ran the film. I think she held it on her shoulders, as they say. What did you think of Florence?
Yeah. I think since we're on the subject, we can move into just talking about the things that we liked in general.
Yeah.
So we're gonna break down all of the things we liked about the film. Then we'll go into all of the things we didn't like about the film. Kind of do some questions and talk about some of the more theoretical analyses. But yeah, so starting with the things that we liked, we'll go on with Florence Pugh. She's just absolutely incredible. I don't think, yeah, like you said, I just don't think she will ever not be amazing.
Right.
She's just incredible. And this is something, you know, the reviews are very controversial. There's a lot of people that are really trashing this film, but everybody's on the same page about Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Every single review I've read has been like, oh, this movie sucks, but Florence Pugh is amazing. Or this movie's pretty good, and Florence Pugh's the best part. So I think that's something everybody can agree on, and she has my heart.
Yeah, absolutely, me too. And I think that I'm hopeful that she may be the only thing in this, at least person in this movie, who will get a nomination, but I'm also kind of scared that she will get snubbed, because I think that she really should be nominated for something for her performance, because it was so good.
Yeah, and I think it goes to show, too, I mean, of course, we don't know. The drama is sort of all speculation. We're going to talk a little bit more about the drama later. But there's, you know, things circulating that maybe she didn't have the best time on set, that there may have been some tensions between her and director Olivia Wilde. But none of that shows in her performance.
Right.
And no matter what happened behind the scenes, we know that she will show up and she will give us her best work no matter the context of the situation, no matter how much she feels aligned with the role. She's just a professional, and she's mm-hmm. amazing at what she does. And I think we can expect this from her in every single film that she's in, no matter what type of film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the next part that I loved the most about this movie was the cinematography, the visuals itself, like the just the whole visual design, whether it be the sets and the costumes were so perfect for the era that they were trying to portray. And it really sucked you in as a viewer to feel like you were a part of it. And it was really beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was my favorite part mm-hmm. of the whole thing. And it really grabs you in as a viewer. It's just gorgeous. And they really nail that 1950s charm.
Yeah.
From the set, the costume design, the color, the music, everything is perfectly tailored to fit that 1950s quote-unquote utopian society.
Right.
I'm a sucker for anything 1950s. We'll get into that when we see American Graffiti at some point later on. That's another 1950s. That's another 1950s film. It's my favorite. But it's just, I don't know, something about the 50s is just gorgeous, and they nailed it. And with that, I mean, aside from just like the set and the costumes and everything, I think that like you said, the cinematography, mm-hmm. the sequences, everything felt very creative. It felt very intentional, and it was one of the most captivating parts of the film, I think, if not the most.
Absolutely. And I think that just to like theorize, but I think that may have been why right after the movie we thought it was so good, is because it felt like it was very put together visually. It felt like a really good movie because of how beautiful the cinematography was and how beautiful the visuals were. And I think that just, it was really its strong point.
Yeah, we were still living in that dream.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do want to talk about Harry Styles a little bit, because I feel like he got like unnecessarily clowned by people, because I think a lot of people need to realize that this is his second movie, I'm pretty sure, and it's his first big role.
I mean, are we going to count the One Direction documentary?
I know.
You know?
I bet there was some acting in there. But, like, I don't know. I don't know why people are saying that he did a bad job. And I don't know if this is, like, conceited for me to say, but I feel like I can spot a bad performance. You know what I mean? And I can spot a good one, too. And I felt like he wasn't on Florence Pugh's level, but I feel like he held up, especially in scenes with her.
Well, yeah, and that was my thing too. I think I definitely, he like didn't stand out as bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
And as a co-star with Florence Pugh, somebody who could outshine anyone.
Yeah, literally.
He was not as outshined as he could have easily been had mm-hmm. he been a worse actor. And I think the flack that he's getting is because, once again, people went in expecting him to be bad, and when you have that expectation, you're going to meet them in your own head.
Yeah.
I was very impressed. I mean, he's not the best actor in the world, but I think he fit the role well.
I think he was a good
person to represent this very tailored, perfect man, especially because I think that's what a lot of people sort of see him as mm-hmm. in the real world.
Exactly.
But getting to see that and then him sort of fall apart and not be that tailored, perfect man anymore, who he never actually was to begin with, is an interesting kind of character. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting character arc, and I think he fit the role well. And I think there's that at the, because I remember at the beginning I was like, why is he British and British and American at the same time?
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on here? And I was like, oh no, this is going to be catastrophic. But then you kind of learn later on that he actually is supposed to be both British and American, because in the real world he's American, and in the fake one he's British. Is that what
it
is?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Which that's our first spoiler, guys. This there are different worlds.
Yeah,
but,
so
he chooses to be British in the fake one, in the simulation.
Yeah, so it's like, all right, this is intentional, you know,
mm-hmm.
give him some credit.
I think he did a good job, and I'm excited to see what else he does in the future, because I think he's only going up from here.
I agree.
Sorry to cut you off. You can go.
No, I just said I agreed.
Oh, sweet. the other thing I was going to say is that I agree with you that people came in expecting it to be bad. So it was just a case of confirmation bias. They were like, yeah, it's bad. They talked themselves into it.
Yeah.
I think that I don't think he deserved the flack. I think he did a good job. Good for you, Harry Styles.
We applaud you.
We
support
applaud you.
Keep acting. Keep acting. We got you. We got your back.
Applauding.
I also want to talk about in terms of things we liked, mm-hmm. that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are really trashing on the twist ending. Mm-hmm. And for me, and maybe this means just went over my head somehow, and I'm not like these other people who are able to predict the ending, but I thought the twist was surprising when it was revealed. I think mm-hmm. that the moment that the twist was revealed, I don't know if I would call that the climax of the film, maybe, because afterwards is when it all starts to fall apart. But the moment when the twist is revealed was still a high point for me because I didn't expect it. And you kind of have that when there's a movie with a twist ending, you kind of have that expectation that there will be that moment when they reveal the twist where you like put your head to your forehead or your hand to your yeah. forehead and you're like, oh, you have the like, oh moment where everything sort of connects in your brain and you're like, uh-huh. why did I not get this before? And I feel like I did have that moment in this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so I was impressed with the twist. It, like I said, falls apart later on. But I did have that own moment, and I think that that's definitely hats off to them for at least getting to that point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was in the same boat. I think that it was a really good concept. It was just, yeah, the aftermath of it, it just, I don't know, it didn't live up. And we'll talk about that later, of course. But, yeah, I think it was good. And I did hear a lot of people say, like, oh, predictable. Like, sometimes I like predictable, though. I think it's done well, and I think it was done well here, too.
Well, yeah, and you mm-hmm. want it to be, like, predictable to the sense that once it's revealed, then everything makes sense. Because you don't want them to throw you something that makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I couldn't have predicted that at all. But at the same time, they didn't throw me any hints that connects me to how this could be possible. Because for me, I didn't actually predict the ending. But once it was revealed, I felt kind of dumb for not having predicted it.
Right.
I was kind of like, oh, duh. That's kind of what I want from a twist ending. It's the same thing that The Sixth Sense gives me.
Right.
When you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't see that earlier.
Yeah.
You know? But I feel like mm-hmm. this movie did have a little bit of those elements in it, and I'm happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know how I feel about admitting this, but I really, truly believed mm-hmm. in Alice, Florence Pugh's character, and Jack, Harry Styles' character relationship. Like, I was a firm believer in their relationship. Like, she was sort of descending into this craziness, and everyone was calling her crazy, and he was, like, standing by her side. That, like, doctor, yeah. like, showed up to their house, and he was trying to give her these medications, and good old Harry Styles is like, no, we're not going to force her to take these medications. I don't think she's crazy. Like, I think she's just going through something. And he was there for her, and I was like, you know what? I believe in this relationship. I think they're in love. I support it. He was standing by her. And then when you realize later on that the whole time he knew that the whole thing was a simulation and he was just, like, playing along, it really just punches you in the gut.
Yeah, it really does. It feels like you feel the heartbreak, too. You're like, and the betrayal. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Jack.
Yeah, and
Jack,
then it's
why
like,
why would you do that?
it got me angry. And I think, mm-hmm. like, that was their intention, where it's like, they get you to believe in this relationship, and then shit hits the fan, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, actually, Harry Styles is the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, because I don't know, this specifically I really, really got me, because then he gets killed, so then Florence Pugh's character kills him, and everything that I felt about that relationship was just gone.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a well-tailored thing that they did.
Yeah,
that made us, like, follow the yeah.
It was, and it was devastating. It was devastating saying that, like, Jack was such a bad guy, but I think when I was watching it, you know that something's wrong right off the bat, because you're like, this world is too perfect. So you have that in the back of your mind. So I think I was always kind of skeptical of Jack. I was like, huh, is he really who he appears to be? But I would always kind of, like, forget about that skepticism, because I was like, oh, he's so charming.
And
he's honestly kind of pretty. And, like, he loves his wife. I'm like, this is a man who loves his wife. And then it would, like, peek through again whenever he would be kind of mean to her. And I was like, oh, my God. What is wrong with him? And then it would go away. So,
Can I say a hot take and say that I don't know that necessarily I would have felt the same about this if it had been Shia LaBeouf playing Jack?
Oh, I know. That's one thing that I feel like we need to let people know, is that Shia LaBeouf, if you didn't know, was supposed to be Jack. And I feel like that would have just changed the movie.
Yeah.
They would have really had to, like, no offense, Shia LaBeouf, they needed to doctor him. I don't know how they would have, like, even when he was a youngin' and, like, even Steven, I don't know if he was as much of a heartthrob as Mr. Harry Styles. I have to look up a picture of him.
Sorry, my phone keeps going off in the background if anyone's wondering what that is. But yeah, I think that that whole thing is really supported by the fact that it's Harry Styles who's playing this character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, we all can't deny he's a good-looking gentleman. And yes. He does the, like, clean-cut look very well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And he had, yeah, they had me wanting to be in Florence Pugh's position a couple times.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple times in the movie. But yeah, the other thing, this is my last bullet point for the things that I liked. It's just kind of an anecdote. Did I say that right?
You did.
Anecdote. Okay, thank you. But one thing I really, you know, the whole women empowerment aspect of this movie is kind of flawed in a lot of ways. But I think all in all, I really enjoyed seeing this sort of false patriarchal society that they tried to build, but where the men are eventually revealed to actually be super weak and kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to see these men sort of become, I think they always were, but we learn that they're actually just like these really weak versions of people.
Yeah.
Who can't survive, who can't succeed in the real world. So they make a fake version of the real world in order to try and succeed. And then they can't even succeed in that fake version of the real world. I was kind of like, yeah, this is what we need to see occasionally, you know?
Exactly.
Which I enjoyed.
I think that was a good aspect too. It made the film feel a bit empowering, but when we get into, I think, our next segment now, which is the bad of this movie, that's, I will probably talk about kind of how that this movie was lacking in that kind of empowerment aspect. You had what Haley said, the fact that it felt very, I don't know, satisfying to see men in this film actually showcase how weak they were. But there were other aspects where I was like, I don't know. I think it was very surface level.
Yeah, I would have liked more of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get ready for a fun little rant.
Yeah,
us.
There's some ranting for sure. This might be my biggest section in my notes. But let's see. What is the first thing that we should talk about? I think that there's just the writing itself was lacking. And I think that like the worst part for me had to have been the pacing.
Yeah, I mean, mine is the first word under things I didn't like is underlined. And just like you said, it's the word pacing.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just the build up to the reveal is way too long. And there's not enough. So, yeah, the build up to the reveal is great. The reveal point is great. We have that oh moment that we want. And then it just kind of falls off. And there's a lack of explanation that supports the reveal and continues that, like, satisfaction of finding out what we've been, you know, missing out on this whole time.
Exactly. And, like, to put this into consideration, the runtime for this film is 2 hours and 3 minutes long. And 3/4 of it is that build-up and that introduction and telling us about the characters. And what was it? Maybe, like, 20 minutes was the aftermath?
Yeah, like that.
So
that really puts it into perspective.
Right? Puts it into perspective just how much we were not given.
How in like the post-production process did they look at that and they went 1 hour and 45 minutes of build up and 20 minutes of resolution?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a good balance.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. And it leaves us with so many questions. Like, this entire section I have about what I did not like is just littered with questions of who was this? Why did this happen? All of these things, because there was no way to wrap up the complexity of the twist in 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I have written here, just like you said, there's just so many unanswered questions, and it's not in the, like, way that you want there to be unanswered questions. It's not like it doesn't come across as if it's intentional. You know, not in the way that a lot of movies will successfully do, which is make us leave the theater questioning things critically and like wondering and interpreting what they were portraying in sort of a unique way, depending on who you are as a viewer.
Exactly.
This just felt like, they had all these ideas. They didn't know how to explain them, didn't know how to back them up. And so they were just like, let's play it off like we want it to be open-ended. We want the audience to question and come up with their own predictions about what's going on. But it didn't feel that way. It felt completely like they just didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Exactly. And I think the biggest plot hole that I saw was we never are told why the men decide to put their wives or their partners into the simulation.
There's no motive.
There's no motive. I mean, and if that's up to interpretation, the only thing I could come up with is like the most surface level explanation of men want to control women.
Yeah. And
which is such an obvious, and it makes it feel less, I don't know, it makes it feel
watered down.
Yeah,
almost.
Watered down. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a great way to
and
put it.
Yeah, this is like this is something I also realized as I was writing my notes.
Uh-huh.
Something I didn't, because there's a lot of things that I didn't realize I really didn't like until after the fact, when I was like scratching my head and I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense. That also doesn't make sense. Where's the context that supports this claim? But it's that Frank, who is the leader of Victory Project,
created it too, not just the leader.
Oh, yeah.
He like actually made the Victory Project, apparently. I don't know if it's ever explicitly said, but it's something we assume.
Yeah,
he's
again,
the one who did it.
But that, yeah, that is makes sense. It's logical. But he totally, like, this is the kind of thing that he totally could have found people, both men and women, who wanted to join this project, who wanted to leave their old life behind, who wanted to, you know, become these virtual beings in a simulation. But he decided instead, he made the conscious decision, I would think it's conscious, to imprison women instead.
Yeah,
of like
in a false reality.
Yeah, which is like maybe because he's really messed up and misogynistic and he wanted to imprison women, or he's just kind of dumb. And like, I think, I don't know, the whole thing just really bothers me because I feel like it doesn't really make a lot of sense why he would choose to imprison women and not just find like women and men who wanted to. Because, you know, Bunny is a good example, right? She says she knows it's a simulation and she wants it.
She wants it.
So like, that's even proof that there are people out there who would probably want this.
Yeah.
So why are you imprisoning women instead? Like, you're only making more problems for yourself. And again, like, Frank is just an anomaly in this film. It's like, who is he? Like,
I know.
Yeah.
In my notes, I have, who the fuck is Frank? Like, we know that he's a leader. We know that he created it. But he is so, I don't know. You don't know anything about him. You don't know about him in the real world at all.
Well, yeah. And it's like, he has very little screen time. And the only thing that he ever, like, from what I can remember, the only memorable things that he ever does is make these very vague speeches about Victory Project and, like, how incredible and amazing it is. And, you know, we've built this wonderful world. It's like, when it comes down to it, we don't have any idea who he is, who his wife is. You know, they throw this, like, surprise again at us at the end when his wife kills him and she's like, ha ha ha, like,
you stupid man.
Yeah And it's like, what is going on? And it's like, that's one of those moments that feels like they were like, let's throw another twist at the audience.
Yeah,
let's have his wife get like kill Frank, and then, but instead of that being like an oh moment, we're just kind of like, what the fuck, like, why did that even happen?
And the most we ever really get from Frank is like, we get an interaction with him and Alice where he says, I've always wanted someone to challenge me. And that's when I thought that we were gonna be, it would be explained to us why he did it.
Yeah, I don't, that, yeah, and that was, whatever. It's just so confusing. And I want, he's like a great villain. And like, I really think he's a good character if we knew more about him and if they had actually made him a proper villain.
Yeah, and he just wasn't. You don't really hate him. Because you just don't feel anything about him.
Well, yeah, you just kind of feel indifferent because you have no idea who he is.
You don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And it just frustrates me because he ends up just getting murdered. So you don't even get, like, a last thing from him. Like, saying, like, oh, it all fell apart. My plan was ruined. Like, why was my plan ruined? Like, we don't,
like,
have that.
The witch in Wizard of Oz. She's like, I'm melting. He's
Yeah, instead, he gets stabbed.
Foiled.
He gets stabbed,
whatever.
And he says nothing, and he dies. And I'm like, I wanted more. But that goes for literally every character, except for Alice. It's like, you just don't know who they are, right?
Yeah, I think everyone is kind of given a, you know, they're like half-assed, except for Alice. She's the only one who's not, you know, like, yeah, who is Frank? Who is the doctor guy?
Who are these
red people dressed in red suits who are like Squid Game soldiers that are like the police officers? Like, who the hell are those people?
Right.
Who is Margaret? You know, we get a little bit of Margaret's story, but like that for me was the biggest plot hole, was like her entire thing is just not developed enough.
I know.
And even when I was writing the summary that I read at the beginning of this podcast, this episode, you know, I wanted to include something about Margaret because she's basically the catalyst for everything that happens in the entire film. But I genuinely didn't even know how to include her in the summary because her storyline was done so poorly. I didn't even know how to sum up her story in one sentence because her story is so unfinished.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating.
It is so frustrating. And that's, we were taught, there's obviously a lot of drama that surrounds this film, right? And one of the biggest ones was the fact that Kiki Layne, who plays Margaret, came forward and said, a lot of my scenes were cut. And it just makes me think, what would the film have been like had we had seen more of Margaret? I just feel like it would have made the movie make more sense.
It totally would have made more sense. Yeah. I think they could have used her storyline to help back up some of those background things, some of those context moments that we don't get. But, and that's the thing, it's like, I'm just left so confused by her storyline. Like, she goes off into the desert, and that causes her to lose her child, who we learn isn't even a real child. Like, why would they take her child away and assume that that's not going to make her more suspicious of what they're doing?
I know.
And
it was an odd punishment.
Yeah, there's just so many things that
there's so many things. And, like, that whole aspect made no sense to me. Because we see Margaret go into the desert with her son, but we don't ever see her go to the headquarters. But after that whole experience of her going to the desert, losing her son, she starts to realize that there is something wrong with the simulation. But what caused Alice to realize there was something wrong in the simulation, she had to go to the headquarters. So it makes me wonder, like, is it different for each of them?
Well, yeah, and it's like, again, are we just left to assume that Margaret also went to the head? Because now I'm thinking, okay, maybe Margaret went to the headquarters with her son. Yeah. When she, like, touched that weird wall thing, there was, like, she, like, went over to the other side, comes back. Her son is not real.
Right.
Maybe, so he can't go over to the other side. So maybe something happens and that causes her son to disappear and that's why he's gone. But again, like, that's just a theory and that, like, could be true, but anything could be true because we have nothing. So you could just make up anything to explain that. Yeah.
Oh, it's so frustrating. It is so frustrating.
I just have so many things that don't make any sense. Like, from what I understood, you know, there's that scene where, so Alice stabs Jack, he dies, Bunny comes running in, reveals that she knows about the simulation. Bunny is like, oh, the men, she was like, you have to get out of here. The men, when they're killed in the simulation, also die in the real world.
Right.
And that sentence, by emphasizing the men, led me to believe, okay, only the men are killed when they're killed in the simulation.
Uh-huh.
But why would Frank, who's a man, create a simulation where only the men die when they're killed, unless he was forced to make it that way, which we don't know because we have no idea how it was made or what any of the technology is behind it. Just, again, these things that just don't make any sense. And it's like they threw that in there. And again, we're just like, why?
Exactly.
Why?
And I don't know, maybe the women do die. I think there was like a point where, I don't know if it was his intention, but Jack is like squeezing Alice really tight. I don't know if he's like trying to kill her, but that's when she panics. She grabs a glass and like slams it over his head. But that also seems like a bit of a gap in the story, is because if the women die and then they just wake up in the real world, then that puts the whole Victory Project at risk because they know everything that happened when they wake up in the real world and they tell people.
Oh, that's
so true. Would they want them to be the ones that die? Not the men. You know what I mean? And that's another thing of like,
yeah, what if a woman accidentally, yeah, well, again,
that's the thing, Margaret.
Yeah, Margaret kills herself. So does that mean she's, because then they take her out of the simulation. They say they're like, she will no longer be living in Victory Project. Okay. Which we learn, okay, that means she's not any longer in the simulation. does that mean, like, how do they preserve that idea in the, like, what's happening in the real world?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, we have no, the only explanation about the real world that we're given mm-hmm. is Jack and Alice have this tumultuous relationship where Alice is the breadwinner and Jack feels inferior because he is lame.
And not a surgeon.
Yeah, and not a badass woman like Alice is. He's watching these weird videos that Frank has created or listening to these weird podcasts created by Frank, which is a very small part of the like story that we're given. And so we're kind of left to assume that he finds out about Victory Project and then finds some way to drug Alice, to put her in this room with these weird eyeball things, and to put her in the simulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we get.
That's
we don't get anything from Frank aside from his voice in this weird podcast video thing. We don't get anything that happens, you know, with Margaret when she exits the simulation. Anything that happens with Alice when she exits the simulation. Like, there's nothing backs up this whole thing at all.
And you also wonder, like, how has it gone on this long? Or actually, we don't know how long it's been going on, to be honest. But the thing is like, wouldn't people be looking for these women?
Yeah, it's like, no one is questioning where Alice is.
Because Alice works at a huge
hospital.
No
one's looking for her. She doesn't have friends or family who are, like, looking for her. And no one's pointing to her weird, like, hobo-looking boyfriend who has no life and just sits at his computer and listens to these strange videos about, Jack has been creating this simulation without anyone knowing that he's creating it. Again, I keep restating the same exact thing because this is what's happening in my brain, where it's just like every little thing that comes up, my brain is like, don't understand that. Don't understand that. Where's the explanation for this? And it just, as more and more things build up, the entire mm-hmm. thing just begins to unravel in my mind.
And like, to put into perspective, Haley and I spent quite a bit of time talking about this movie before we ever started recording this. And every time we bring up something new that we are like, wait, that wasn't answered either. It's like infinite mental math trying to understand this movie.
Yeah, and I think that sort of goes with the fact that we talked about earlier, with the fact that our initial reaction was so good. But then the more you talk about it, it gradually just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Because more of the plot holes and problems start to reveal themselves.
Exactly.
And so you're like, oh, that's great. But then this... But then also this doesn't make sense. And so that's why over time our opinions of it have kind of just gotten worse and worse.
Exactly. And it probably will continue being that way. But it's so frustrating when you realize that there's so much missing. It's almost like, I know this is very, I shouldn't say something like this, but like you kind of feel blue balls, right? Like this movie just was just like,
it's
need
like
more.
Get me to the point where you give me the reveal and I'm so excited because I'm like, yes, this sounds good, this has potential. And then all of a sudden it just drops off right as you're about to get to the best part.
Literally.
And you're just like, no, like don't rip it from me like that. Like don't like take away the satisfaction I was hoping to get after I had that initial big like shock moment.
Exactly. And I mentioned before that I really think this is a fault of writing. And my theory is this. I said earlier that it was written by Katie Silberman, but the original screenplay was actually written by the Van Dyke brothers, who I don't know their first names. I only remember that they're the Van Dyke brothers because they're Dick Van Dyke's grandsons. If you don't know who Dick Van Dyke is, he was in Mary Poppins, for those who don't know. So nepotism, but not in a bad way, I guess. I don't know. But these two brothers wrote the original screenplay. Then it made it in the hands of Katie Silberman, who rewrote it and doctored it. So it makes me wonder what was in the original iteration of this screenplay.
Yeah, was this original screenplay written by two men?
Yeah.
Did it have all of these misogynistic elements in it? Was it about? Was it supposed to be about women empowerment like the movie claims to be, right? I don't know. That's something we may never know.
And we won't ever know.
And it's interesting.
I want to know. It makes me want to... I wish I knew what the original looked like. The last thing that I think really changed my opinion to very negative about this film was the fact that I watched Stepford Wives. And if nobody's seen it, I'm not going to spoil it. But the big thing is that it's almost the same thing. The same concept. And I don't know. I think that whatever magic was left in my viewing of Don't Worry, Darling just kind of faded even more. I was like, oh, well, it was done before. and better.
Yeah.
47 years ago.
1975. Yeah. Did it first. Yeah, and I have not seen Stepford Wives. I have been reading the reviews, and I've noticed that a lot of other people who have seen Stepford Wives are complaining about the same thing that you just mentioned.
Yeah, which is why I watched it.
Yeah,
I wanted to see. I was like,
You were like, and then you were like, oh, wait, they're right. This is the same thing.
I don't have that
thing to compare it to. You know, I think when it comes down to comparing old movies with new movies and, you know, saying stuff like, oh, this has been done before, you know, is a fair critique to make. I also think that, you know, there are ways to take something that has been done before and make it new, right? And I think that's, like, perfectly okay. I think to modernize certain things that have already been done is totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're adding something new to it and you're not just, like, it's not just, like, a carbon copy. Again, I have not seen Stepford Wives, so I can't fully comment on this.
Right.
But I understand where people are coming from looking at this and being like, this is a carbon copy, or this is a copy of Stepford Wives that tried to add something new but just failed.
Yeah.
And I can sympathize with that. I totally understand where that opinion is coming from. Mm-hmm. And you better believe I'll be watching Stepford Wives at some point.
Hopefully.
In the near future.
I think that was the end of my kind of critiques. But I guess I'll give my little ending remark. I think, once again, Florence Pugh did an incredible job. She stole the show. The visuals were amazing. The writing and direction, though, was just lacking. And it really sucks because I'm a fan of Olivia Wilde. When I saw Booksmart when it came out, that was her first film, and I thought it was incredible. And everybody else thought it, too. I mean, this Olivia Wilde's next project, which was Don't Worry, Darling, was literally in a bidding war with 18 different studios. So people, she was sought after. And I really hope that this movie does not shadow the rest of her career, because I think that she has potential and I want to see what else she comes out with, because I'm a fan.
Yeah, and I'll definitely be watching her next film.
Yeah, I will too.
I'm going to let this one lie. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I'll keep on her radar for sure. You know, we didn't really want to talk. I know we, like, kind of glossed over the drama a little bit, because it is kind of hard to talk about this film without talking about the drama. But we really wanted to, you know, not go too much into that, just because for us, I think we can kind of agree that it's been frustrating to separate the two from each other, because, you know, when I was doing research about some of the things I kind of wanted to talk about in this episode, I had to go through like 3 or 4 pages of Google that was all about the drama.
Exactly.
And I was visibly frustrated with that, because, you know, I am convinced that this drama was blown up because Olivia Wilde is a woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no denying the fact that of all the male directors, you know, 96% of Hollywood is male directed. You know, this kind of stuff, affairs, cheating, you know, questionable behavior has definitely been done by male directors. Like, there's no question about that. And it's never been blown up, or in most cases, at least, on average, is not blown up in the way that this one has been. And I think the fact that it's a woman director makes people more inclined to blow up the drama. And it's very frustrating.
It's true. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that that's just the unfortunate aspect of being a woman in the film industry, is that you are under way more scrutiny than men are. And this happens in pretty much every film project that is woman-centric. You see all of this drama with women. Like, it goes all the way back to, like, the golden age of cinema, like the big feud that everyone talks about, like Betty Davis and Joan Crawford, that never existed. It was just, they want to create drama, and that overshadows the actual movie. And, like, to the point that I researched all of the drama and I have it written in my notes, but I don't want to feed into it. I don't want to even share it, because it's not important to the narrative of the movie. And it has clouded a lot of people's opinions of the movie.
Yeah, and unfortunately, most people probably already know about it, because it's everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But if
spit
you don't...
Spit gay, everyone. I don't know.
Spit gay. Spit gay. That was the dumbest part. I think... But there is one important part, which I already talked about, and I think that's the only important part of the drama, is the fact that Kiki Layne was cut from the movie. Yeah. Because that actually affected the movie.
Yeah, and that's actually something that affected the narrative. and uh-huh. shows. Like, it negatively affected the narrative, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
My closing remarks, I should mm-hmm. say. I basically, you know, the film is 2 hours and 3 minutes long. I was entertained the whole time. Yeah. I sat through it in the theater. I paid mm-hmm. to go see it. I walked out of that theater, and I had no regrets. And I still don't have any regrets. And in fact, a big part of this is that I actually kind of wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to keep watching and get these explanations. I probably wouldn't have even minded if this movie was 3 hours
yeah.
long, if they had given me all of the contextual information uh-huh. that it is lacking right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that fact alone, the fact that A, I want to know more, B, I think I'll probably watch this film again, just because, you know, it helps to create my concrete opinion after mm-hmm. having seen a movie twice. And I think those two things go to show that, like, I have to give it a decent rating
yeah.
because I did enjoy the experience. And I have absolutely no regrets. And I have yeah. had a lot of regrets for movies that I've seen.
Absolutely.
And I didn't with this one. As we keep talking about time and time again, this is just a classic case of the internet affecting people's opinions. And for me, it's quite frustrating. You know, it's not the best movie mm-hmm. in the world. But there's so many mediocre films out there that people still really enjoy. And I think that this could have been one of those films. And unfortunately, it was just doomed from the beginning.
Absolutely. I agree. What's your rating?
Out of five.
Uh-huh.
I like to go in between the lines, but I have grappled between 3, 3.25. It's like dependent on how I think about it. It's like
yeah.
if I'm thinking about how pretty it was and like the 1950s charm, which I mm-hmm. love, then I'm like more like a 3.25, which technically isn't allowed, but I'm making it allowed. but I think I've settled on a solid 3.
Yeah.
Which I think is a higher than what most people have given it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a
3 out of 5.
That's a 60%. That's pretty good. For me, I'm giving it a strong 2.5, which is still giving it more than it's gotten. That's 50%. So I think, yeah, fair. A nice 50.
That's still 50. An F.
Just kidding. Yeah. <It's> well, like, do you think it deserves more than an F? It's, yeah. If I was just rating 4,
mine's
okay.
a 60%, which is a D.
Yeah.
For Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Thought you'd like to know that little tidbit. No.
Yeah. So that was our first episode. This was so fun. There was lots to say about Don't Worry, Darling. There's probably more to say. But next time, we will be doing a little spooky movie. We're going to do Rosemary's Baby, which came out in 1968, directed by Roman Polanski, who is very infamous, and we will talk about that too. But, yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to watch that before we air our next episode, that'd be great. If you've already seen it, even better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I guess that concludes our first episode. I hope you guys enjoyed doing this as much as we have. Yeah. I guess let us know what you think about our opinions. If you like them, we like you. If you don't, we don't like you. No, I'm just kidding.
Just kidding.
No, we like everyone. We just
respect your opinions.
No, we just like to talk. And
yeah.
again, we're doing this for fun. We love it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we hope that there's people out there who will love it too.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for listening. And yeah. I guess we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys.